KC Files, the ultimate Chiefs podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
With us now is Soren Petro of 810 WHB in Kansas City. You can follow him on Twitter at Soren Petro. Soren, we saw a pretty solid performance yesterday by the Chiefs against a good Jets defense. Make no mistake, they're 1-2 after this loss, but that's a pretty good defense they've got there. Casey really was able to flip it around and score quite a few points.
Yeah, they were, and obviously when you take the ball away eight times, that'll get you a lot of points, and that's what the Chiefs were able to do. Six interceptions and two fumble recoveries, two defensive scores, Derek Johnson taking them back 55 yards, and INT took back 55 yards for a touchdown, and then a fumbled return that pops into Demetrius Harris's hands, and he's got no one between him and the end zone. You know, that's certainly goes a long way, and you know, the Chiefs offense didn't put up big numbers, but they did control the football, and they did control the clock, which is something that the New York Jets really, or maybe actually a better way to put it, didn't allow the Jets to control the clock. They were averaging 37 minutes a game coming into this contest, and the Chiefs didn't let that happen. So, you know, they always play complimentary football. It's never going to look like, you know, the greatest show on turf, Rams or the Broncos from a few years ago when Peyton Manning was throwing for five touchdowns. They're going to need their defense and special teams to play well, and then their offense to be effective when they have the opportunity, and that's what they did in this game.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, you read that right, folks, when you looked at the box score. That was six interceptions on Ryan Fitzpatrick there by the Chiefs. This, in many ways, actually struck me as like, you know, if Andy Reid were to sit down and draw out his perfect game plan, it would look a lot like this, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he'd like to be more dynamic, or at least you'd hope he'd like to be more dynamic on offense. But you know, Alex Smith is a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. And he can manage the game, and he won't lose it. That's something he really understands. And I think that's something that Andy Reid has preached to him. I think Jim Harbaugh preached it to him as well, that when you know you've got a guy that, you know, maybe doesn't have a cannon for an arm and you know, just is so risk averse, let's build a game plan that allows him to work. The key is, can you build a defense and a special teams to get you the big plays that every team needs? Because the Chiefs just don't have big playmakers. Now, Travis Kelce had a big catch and run in this game. That's important. And they're trying to get more weapons. I think they do have more weapons. Jeremy Maclin was a huge addition last year, and they think that Chris Conley can come along and be that guy. He had a few catches in the game against the Jets as well. But, you know, Jamaal Charles should be back soon. They're counting on him to hopefully be close to what he was and provide some big plays for that offense. It's just not going to come with your traditional quarterback goes back and flings it down the field. It's going to be a lot of run after catch or hand the football off and have them go. And then make plays on your defense. Marcus Peters has had 12 interceptions in 19 games as a professional player of regular season football. He's a big-time playmaker. Derek Johnson's a big-time playmaker. And they look forward to getting Justin Houston back sometime in the second half of the season. And at that point, they think the defense that caused six turnovers should get even better.
You look at Spencer Ware in that backfield filling in for Jamaal Charles since he's injured. Now, he's had it's very hard to match up to the first game he had in the opening game when he had almost 200 combined yards. But it's been a little bit less each time out, even though he's getting more touches, 21 touches yesterday, not nearly as many yards. But it's been enough. Do you think if Jamaal Charles is ready as soon as next week that they sit him and go with Spencer Ware primarily for another week and then maybe wait for Charles to come back after the bye week?
I think in listening to Andy Reid early this week that he's still kind of waiting. You know, if they don't play him in the Steeler game, he buys another week with the bye week. And I think he's got an opportunity then to say, okay, now he should be 100%. Now we get to where we're a full calendar year from when the injury happened. You know, he blew out the other knee a number of years ago and came back in less than a year and was very effective, had a great year. That was Andy Reid's, I think it was his first year in 2013 when he came back and was just fantastic for the Kansas City Chiefs. So, you know, look, they in my opinion, kind of botched the Justin Houston injury coming down the stretch, not having the surgery immediately in November, trying to get him to play. he was on the field in the postseason games, but was falling down just when he tried to turn the corner. It was really a mistake. And then it took a couple more months for him to figure out that he needed surgery. And now, because of that, they're playing without Justin Houston. So I think there's a chance of being overly cautious with Jamal Charles. But with Spencer Ware and Charcander Quest, I know he didn't really put up any numbers in the game on Sunday. The game before, he had over 60 yards from scrimmage. He does a nice job as well. I don't think they have to rush Jamal Charles back. So I think they probably wait against the Steelers, get through the bye. He opens up on the road against the Raiders in a kind of a part-time role, and then slowly reassumes that feature back role with Spencer Ware still getting a fair share of the load, more of a committee, I guess I should say, than really a feature back role for Jamal Charles.
And that's really the blessing for them, is because you actually have enough depth that you can carry the load and ease Jamal Charles in if that's what needs to happen. One of the guys that's been impactful, again, we saw Travis Kelce again having a terrific game, 89 yards. Got him to the end zone for the first time this year. It is amazing when you watch a Chiefs game what sort of offense they run when Travis Kelce is really on, or when he's either missing or having a bad game. He really, in many ways, even with the running game, is as much of an impact player for them as anybody else on the roster, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And you know, they got got him to catch five balls against the Houston Texans, but it was only for like 30-some-odd yards. And I think that was one of the real problems. You know, he really is one of their biggest playmakers. He's a tough matchup. If you put a corner on him, they like to then, you know, try to run the ball at you. And if you put a safety or certainly a linebacker on him, he's just too fast. He really does. He is one of those tight ends that can kind of play like a wideout. And Andy Reid generally does a really good job of scheming him open. It's amazing, for as effective as he's been, how many times you'll see him during the course of a season where he's the only guy on the frame in the TV. And you're like, how did they lose Travis Kelce in this defense? But Reed does a really good job, I think, in the week of game planning. I think that's when he's absolutely at his best, is those 6.5 days leading up to when you're going to play on Sunday and putting that game plan together. And he had another good one here against the Jets and was able to get Kelce open. When it doesn't work, though, then it gets harder. And that's what you saw against the Texans. They need him to be an integral part. And they've got to do a better job of getting him the ball in the end zone. I mean, he's had 5 touchdowns each of the last 2 years. Good yardage totals for a tight end, but hasn't been able to hang that 10, 11, 12 touchdown season up there. And I think that's something that they've got to really find a way to do with him this year. So far, only the 1 touchdown that he had on the weekend. That number's got to go up if this offense is going to really take a step forward.
When you look at that box score again, the 6 interceptions by Ryan Fitzpatrick, one, I mean, that pops out in and of itself. You don't often have 6. They don't often have the opportunity to throw 6 before the coach tries someone else. But Fitzpatrick, what struck me is the sacks. 0. They had 15 yeah. passes defense. The Chiefs got their hands on tons and tons of passes. For reference, the folks, the Jets had 1 pass defense, and they didn't sack him. So this is clearly a scheme where they were kind of, there was pressure, but they were really bamboozling Fitzpatrick and confusing him, baiting him into the wrong throws. What was their particular scheme in this game?
You know, I mean, I think you'd have to call it a bend but don't break approach, and that's usually not Bob Sutton's history. They've been, you know, top 6 or 7, even as high as I think 3rd or 4th in the previous 3 years with him when it comes to the sack total. So I think, you know, well, what they did in this game, look, they don't have the same pass rush without Justin Houston. Last year, Houston led the team with 7.5 sacks, didn't play in the last 5 games, and they were still up there, I think, at number 4 or 5 in the NFL in sacks. So they can still create pressure even without that go-to guy. I think Bob Sutton does a good job of scheming, and that's what he usually does, is he's aggressive. You'll see some blitz, some twists, safeties coming, linebackers coming, and he wants to be aggressive up there. And Tom Ali is not really going to just beat anybody off the ball, but he can still get coverage sacks, plays the run extremely well, and D-Ford has a great upfield move. And if the interior can collapse the pocket, then the quarterback might run into D-Ford. But there's no sugarcoating that he's been a disappointment as a first-round pick. But I think in this game, they really did play bend but don't break. I mean, the Jets were knocking on the goal line door a number of times. And in fact, several of the interceptions happened back in the Chiefs' own end zone, where they were back against the wall. This game could have looked different if they don't create those turnovers, but they did. And I think Bob Sutton clearly, you know, they won the coaching matchup. He obviously, outdid Sam Gailey, certainly outdid Ryan Fitzpatrick, and gave him a lot of looks that he wasn't used to. And you're right. You mentioned that they did get pressure. And we did pull the numbers, but it was 6 interceptions, 0 touchdowns, while being sacked 0 times has never, or at least since 1960, has never occurred in the NFL. So it was kind of a unique game, but there really was more pressure. Sometimes that sack stat is misleading. They did. They were knocking him around. He was making some of those throws on the interceptions with guys hanging all over him. So their pass rush was better than the zero sacks would indicate. But still, it's three sacks in three games this year for the Chiefs, and that's going to be a problem. There are quarterbacks that will make them pay if they can't put some hits on them, and probably Ben Roethlisberger will be one of them next week. They're going to have to get more of a pass rush than they had against the Jets.
Well, when you have a young guy like Marcus Peters in the backfield, that the second-year man has just been amazing. He had the two interceptions yesterday. That's 12 picks in his first 19 games as a pro. Since the NFL merger in 1970, the most anyone's ever had in their first 19, up until Peters, was seven. What kind of ball hawk is this guy for folks who haven't been able to watch the Chiefs very often?
You know, he is he's tremendous. I mean, his ability to get his head around and see the quarterback while maintaining contact with the receiver is something that's really special. He's obviously athletically gifted. You know, we compared him to Darrelle Revis just because they're very similar height, weight, even the speed ratio. Revis, I think, was 0.05 hundredths of a second faster in the 40, maybe had a couple of more reps on the bench. But there are a lot of similarities between the two as far as their physical build coming out. And I think there are a lot of similarities between the two in how they play. I think the difference is he really is there to get INTs, and he's much more of a gambler. I know coming into this game, he had 10 sacks in the first 18 games. First 18 games for Darrelle Revis, he had 10 interceptions. Revis only had four in his first 18. The difference was Revis had only given up four touchdowns, where Peters had given up 10. So he's much more of a gambler. There's more of a boom or bust to him. He can get beat over the top, and the Texans did beat him over the top. And I think that's what was great about this game is he didn't give up any of the big plays. He still created the turnovers. And on top of that, the first two games, you know, personal foul penalties and really getting in the drawing contest with Keenan Allen big time before Keenan Allen went down. And that may be the reason why the Chiefs won a game is because Keenan Allen hurt his knee, because he was definitely getting the better of Marcus Peters in that game. And then DeAndre Hopkins had some big moments against him as well, and the Texans win against the Chiefs. This game, he seemed more focused on just playing football, not winning a jawing session with the opposition and the fans. And that's where he picked up his taunting penalty, was barking at the fans and pointing at the fans in Houston. He seemed to be much calmer and just focused on playing football, and that made him a better corner. I think as long as he can control his emotions, he's going to be the best corner in football for a 3 or 4 or 5 year period, however long the athleticism is at its peak, because he is as good as anybody at getting his head around, knowing where the ball is, tracking the ball, and then catching it. Now, there's a lot of guys that are playing corner because they couldn't play receiver very well because they couldn't catch the ball. This kid can really catch the football. I think he's going to be a lot of fun for Chiefs fans to watch for the next 6, 7, 8 years.
Well, he gets another very stiff test in Antonio Brown and the rest of the Steelers wide receivers and Ben Roethlisberger next week on Sunday Night Football. He is Soren Petro. The station is 810 WHB in Kansas City. Follow him at Soren Petro on Twitter. Soren, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you. That's Soren Petro again, 810 WHB, at Soren Petro on Twitter. Follow him out there. Stay tuned next, because the coach, Brian Billick, is coming up.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames. And then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona. And you can always talk about that going from the, you know, quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. and they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really, that the Houston Texans off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett in his very first start showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. You know, we all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. And it's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It seemed like it was almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now, he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything, they've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, And now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last eight division titles. And they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10. Their second statement game of the year, despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in three things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had eight starters that were our former first or second round draft pick. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost one regular season game last year. They've already lost two. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to two games. So, oh, my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example, you look at the game, Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions, and that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, is just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then and Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, 4 touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had 6 starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after 3 games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week 1 to week, you know, now heading into week 4. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make it go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo is actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in. But as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run, but this is probably the best thing because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe. But as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of the game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially as the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, it's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, they'll be lucky to win six or seven games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen, they're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it, bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, when he is taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? And after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league because we cover them all. My name's Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R, and I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.